Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday to all of you. Welcome in. And this is your Weekly Dose podcast. We do thank you guys for joining us today as we are streaming somewhat live to you from Orange County, California. And if you're new to Weekly Dose, this program is all about having fun as we recap our past week's experiences and enlighten your day through laughter. Laughing at all the things we experience in everyday life, the embarrassments, the silly things, the awkward things, even the things that we're afraid to talk about, but we still do. You know, the things that connect us all, the things that make us human. As they say, laughter is the best medicine. Of course, to all of our listeners, old and new, we always love it when you guys are a part of the show and join the conversation. You can do that several ways. Comment on each of our episodes on our website, yourweeklydose.com. Send a message to us via Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1. Say hello to us on Facebook at yourweeklydose. Or you can even send us a personal message, and you can email us at yourweeklydose@gmail.com. Don't forget, you guys can always download past shows for free from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, you can subscribe through iTunes, iHeartRadio, or Spotify. Just search for Your Weekly Dose, and most importantly, tell the world what you think about the show, so please rate and review the show itself. And of course, today we are playing I Want You Back by the Jackson 5, because... Well, we're not actually here today, so you guys are going to hear a past moment show. And as we were trying to figure out which one to play for you guys, we definitely wanted to make you laugh because we know we had technical difficulties last week in doing the parade and everything with the Strawberry Festival, which is currently up right now. So you guys can go ahead and download last week's show. But we want to kind of go back into our archives and really have a good interview and show you guys... some good times here. So we reached back to our second year of being on the air when we had two really awesome guys on the show at the same time, which was Dan Povenmire and Jeff Swampy Marsh, who are the co-creators of Phineas and Ferb and also Milo Murphy's Law. And currently right now, both men are also working on current projects. Right now, Jeff is Dress Off with Marsh is working on Pete the Cat, which is airs on Amazon. And also coming up on Disney is Hamster and Gretel that Dan Povenmire is working on as well. And hopefully we'll get Dan in here pretty soon so we can talk about that show and the future of the show and how he came up with the idea and all of that. But in the meantime, let's go back to 2018, I guess, when we had both men on the show. So here we go, our interview with Dan Povenmire and Jeff Swampy Marsh. And speaking, these two men are joining us today are truly innovators in animation world. They are the creators of one of the biggest TV shows in the Disney universe. You know, I'm talking about an award-winning Phineas and Ferb, which ran for 8 seasons on Disney's XD channel. It's the comedy of this show rivals that of old Warner Brothers cartoons, but also brings in a musical element and makes us sing songs about summer, squirrels in our pants, football X7, platypuses, frenemies, and how Gitchy Gitchy Goo means I love you.
Now with their current
time well spent.
And now with their current hit show, Milo Murphy's Law, also on Disney XD, they have joined forces with the king of parody, Weird Al Yankovic, who voices the title character. Please welcome to the show my friend Jeff Swampy Marsh and his partner in crime, Dan Povenmire. How are you, good gentlemen?
Dude,
what's up?
Swampy, I miss you, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, man. Working like a crazy person, but, you know, having a good time.
Awesome. And Dan, this is
just
the first
time. Just so you guys know, I can't hear Swampy at all.
Oh, you can't hear Swampy at all? Okay.
Yes.
Well,
which is a shame.
So I hear you guys laughing.
I am saying some wonderful things.
I know. I'm beside myself from it. Okay. How uncomfortable
that is. How about now, Dan?
Say something, Swampy.
Hello.
There he is.
I can kind of hear you, Dan.
The dulcet tones of Swampy Marsh right there.
My life's usually better if Dan's just a little muted. You know, you don't want full volume. Well, it's a bit much.
Everybody's life is a little bit better if I'm a little bit muted.
Oh, not true, Dan. Not true. Well, first off, before we get into the depths of the interview, I need to explain to the room and to our listeners how I met you, Swampy. My son Roman created his own theme song to the Brian and Jill show when they had their podcast. And in it, he mentions Swampy. And Dan, I think you're definitely going to kick out of this. Do you remember this, Swampy?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much.
He's like, how can I forget this?
Okay, so I'm going to play it.
And you still came on the show.
He
wow.
did. He did.
Yeah, no.
So I'm going to play a little snippet of it here, and Brian and Jill are actually going to do a quick introduction on it as well. So here we go.
You remember listener Sean Roberts?
Yes, of course.
Came in with his son, Roman.
Mm-hmm.
And Roman, we both thought Roman was
40.
At least 5 years older than he actually was. And he ends up being, he's still... I mean, how old did he say?
He's, I think, 8 or 9.
Eight or nine. And we thought he was, like, almost in his teens.
Yeah.
This kid is so sharp. Well, Sean sent a picture of his son. A video of his son sitting in his car seat, in the back seat. And apparently, Roman, who's a very creative little kid, came up with a Brian and Jill theme song.
Hey.
So, here it is.
Brian and Jill. Brian and Jill. Brian and Jill, you are the best, with Donnie and Kathy along your side. Even Swampy makes a mess.
Nobody knows what Swampy makes a mess. I'm sure Swampy will enjoy hearing that. Did Swampy ever make a mess on the show?
Not that I'm aware of.
He cried once.
Oh. And there you go. What do you think about that, Dan?
I think your son must have been in our office.
Now, Swampy, do you remember what your reaction was?
No.
Okay.
Other than that floored me.
Well, I have that too, so here we go with that.
Remember we played yesterday, or last week we played Roman, listener
John's son.
Roman, and he sang the Brian and Jill theme song.
Yes.
He ended it with... And it didn't have really anything to do with the song or rhyme with it, but he ended it with, and Swampy makes a mess.
Right.
And so here is Swampy, co-creator of Phineas and Ferb, on the phone with us on our dear friend.
Hey, Swampy.
Swampy makes a mess? Come on, how did he know that he's lying on me? Because I thought I was pretty discreet about the mess I made. So that's all I really have to say on that, but... That was extremely cute.
Oh, it was. He did a cute job. That kid is amazing.
And there we go. And from that point on, you know, it started the friendship. And Swampy and I would tweet back and forth. And what really solidified it, though, is that for their 1 year anniversary, Swampy comes into the studio. I'm also there. And Swampy comes in and gives Brian some scotch. So here we are at 10 o'clock in the morning drinking scotch.
Ooh, that seems like a bad idea.
Oh, man, now I'm disappointed they didn't come in here today.
And Swampy is sitting next to me, and I kind of just introduce myself. You know, hi, my name is Sean. And he goes, oh, okay.
Because
you know,
it is Sean.
And, you know, and just like, I go, by the way, Swampy, I'm
Sean, I go, I'm Roman's father. He goes, no way, dude, your kid is awesome. and then
you're infinitely cooler when you find out that you're Roman's dad.
Exactly. And then later on, a few months later, then Roman finally got to meet Swampy. I think we were, where were we at, Swampy? I think Frank and Sons. I think because you were doing an autograph session, I think somewhere like in City of
Industry. Yeah.
Yeah, and finally.
Oh, at the I can't remember the name of the convention. I was out there. It was when I was hanging out with Bill Kopp. He was out there as well.
Yeah, and we took Roman down over there and got to meet Swampy for the first time. And I'll never forget what you said, Swampy. You go, I will sign anything for this kid.
Oh,
yeah.
And it was just awesome. And thus began the friendship between Swampy and I. So. And it just kind of gone from there. But Dan, I want to thank you also for coming on because this is the first time of meeting you, and just want to say you guys are freaking awesome, and of course the show and everything is just awesome. So I want this interview to be a little bit different than others you guys have done in the past. We've all heard the story.
You want us to do it naked?
Sure, absolutely.
Yes, if you do, we will.
Yeah, we'll get naked right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, look, I'm naked all the time.
Yeah, my guess is Swampy's already there. So.
Yeah.
More than likely.
Exactly. So I know you guys met on The Simpsons. Swampy, you get a job with Rocco's Modern Life. You bring Dan into that and everything. What really made the partnership work between you two, and when did you know that the partnership would work?
I don't actually know that it does. I mean, we're still waiting to see on that. You know, we're if you find out the answer to that question, let us know.
Yeah. We, like everybody else, I think who has been really relatively successful, are just waiting for people to realize that we're frauds. You know, that moment in Invasion of the Body Snatchers where Donald Sutherland points and screams, and you realize somebody's figured out that you're just an idiot who's been faking it really well for a while.
If it helps at all, Swampy, I've known that for a while.
I know. I think that's one of the reasons we work so well together.
Well, you do hide your ID 10T badges very well.
Yeah.
They threw us in a room as a writing team on Rocco, and we just really enjoyed writing together. We had such a good time. We had a better time at work than just about anywhere else. And we said we should create a show together so that we can sell it. You know, we'll sell it, we'll get it on the air, and then we'll be able to continue working together because this show's eventually going to end. And then we did, and it took 13 years to sell it. And during that time, we never worked together once. So,
you know, the funny thing is, Danny, too, I remember kind of coming to the realization, and it was while we were on Rocco, that the other writing teams really weren't having the kind of good time that we were.
Wow.
And it was like literally coming out of pitches. And I can't remember who we had the conversation with, but somebody said, how did it go? And it was like, well, it went great. We, all the jokes got laughs, and, the song went over really well. And the person went, the jokes got laughs?
Oh.
And there was this moment of, wait a minute, you guys go in there and pitch, and you don't get laughs?
Wow.
And I just thought, I don't know if I could come in every day. That's what we're going for.
Actually laugh, like, out loud? Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think for that person is a moment of realization of like, I'm doing something that other people don't do, but maybe I'm doing something wrong here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was odd.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so we always had a good time. But also Swampy and I are not your typical animators in that we were both, in drama and in bands. We had both performed in front of people in various capacities a bunch, and we enjoyed that. So when we would go in and pitch, we sort of had a showmanship in our pitches, and we would do the various dialogue, and like there's three people having a conversation, and we would do all the different voices, but we would do whatever the next line was. So I would do Rocco, he'd do Filbert. I would do Heifer, he'd do Rocco, I'd do Filbert. You know, you know what I mean? We would just switch back and forth between those voices. And so it had like a nice rhythm and a crackle to the comedy. So, I think that a lot of the other teams did really funny stuff, but they weren't really good at presenting it.
Got it. Okay.
You know, that's what we had a much better time at. Mm-hmm. You know?
No, it's true. Because, you know, you look at the shows, we didn't have a lock on funny shows. There was a lot of funny material making it to the air, especially in Rocco. Mm-hmm. But in the room, I just think it was a lot easier for us to get our ideas and our jokes approved and out there, mostly because of that presentation. When we got done, it felt like a show.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Now, as
we had less revisions, I think, than almost everybody.
You guys got it right the first time. That makes sense. Now, as a fellow songwriter, myself, because since I singer-songwriter, I was always amazed on the number of songs that you guys wrote for Phineas and Ferb. Just in general, how important was music in each of your lives?
Oh, well, you know, Swampy comes from music royalty, and my dad was a guitar instructor on the side, and we did the choir in church when we were growing up, and I was in a band for 17 years. Swampy was in a band for, there was a point at which they were trying to make Swampy become a pop star.
Somewhere there are pictures.
That was not really going to work.
real quick, too, I know there was a picture that you posted yesterday, Dan, on the guitar. What was the answer to that?
Oh, it was a Gibson Sonics 180. I was surprised that three people got it within about 10 minutes. It was this low-line Gibson that they made for like people who couldn't afford a Gibson back in the 80s, I think, and like early 80s or maybe late 70s. And the back of the neck, if you played it for any length of time, which I did, I played it for like 16, 17 years, like the varnish would come off and get all mottled and stuff in the back. It was a good sounding guitar. It was not really a quality guitar in any way. But I think they only made it for a year. So I thought I'd throw that trivia question out.
Was that a bolt-on neck?
It was a bolt-on neck. Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. I know which one it is now. Yeah. Because I think I suggested that it was a Les Paul. I think
customs,
or that, or Les Paul studio, or something like that,
is the one. That no, I could not have afforded a studio.
Yeah,
at the time, I should buy a Les Paul studio because that's one of my favorite guitars, and now I could probably afford it, but at the time it was like, oh no, I'm never going to be able to afford that. What do you have for like $200?
hey, I got my first guitar at Sears, so you know I can understand.
Yes, exactly. Oh, I had a $40 electric guitar at one point.
Wow.
Wasn't it Dan Electro was the Sears brand originally?
Yeah, that's true. It was.
Actually, a pretty good guitar.
Now, Swampy, Dan said that you came from music royalty. What is he referring to?
My grandfather was a big band leader. Les Brown and his band are renowned. He was at the top of the charts starting like kind of around the war. His first massive hit was with Doris Day. He did Sentimental Journey, I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm, and went on to be the musical director for Bob Hope, for all the Bob Hope tours overseas, all the Bob Hope specials. Then the Bing Crosby shows. He was the band leader and the musical director for all the Dean Martin shows. And he was, you know, one of those. In his day, that's what's kind of weird to think about. You see all the pictures. In his day, he was, you know, the Stones.
Yeah, he
but
was.
Back then, everybody was, he was the house band at the Hollywood Palladium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We grew up with.
There were like three super famous big band, the guys, it was Glenn Miller, Tommy Dorsey, and Les Brown.
Yeah.
So he was really like, you know, he was like a huge rock star by our standards.
So I was at,
we went out one time because there was a B-17 bomber that has been renovated by, I think it was the Confederate Air Force, and they were touring around, and my grandfather was kind enough to come out and get me a tour with, because I love airplanes. He couldn't care less. But he was really sweet and said, yeah, come on, let's go, and we'll get you the VIP tour. And it was very sweet. But we were there, and these ladies came up to me, and they were my grandfather's age, you know, in their 70s. And darling ladies, and she says, excuse me, young man, is that Les Brown? And I turned and went, oh, yeah. And the two of them shrieked and giggled like teenage girls. And it was the most darling thing. And it was one of the first times I kind of went, oh, yeah, that was what my grandfather was back in the day. They really went, That's it was like, the cutest thing.
I hate and then they start throwing depends. You know?
I hate to like compare this at all, and I'm hating myself. You probably will hate myself for saying this, but it's as if like one of the Justin Bieber fans met Justin Bieber later in life and like is shrieking.
Yeah.
Like that's insane.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely it. And it was kind of a mixed blessing for me growing up and kind of wanting to be a musician because I was surrounded by tons of guys who were absolutely the top of their game. And so I could learn any instrument I wanted. It kind of kept me, I realized later, from really focusing on any one. Because it was like, oh, that was cool. I played baritone horn and trombone and a little bit of violin. And I played some keyboard and a little guitar. And I never really focused on one. Plus, there was Grandpa. I mean, I wanted to play rock and roll, and Grandpa was, college trained. He was the top thing. And after a while, he was like, don't do the music thing. You should do the drawing thing. Do the drawing thing. Because he also was like,
ouch.
You know, his version of what music was meant you read music off a sheet. You were, a gigging professional, and he also realized that he was one of the rare guys in his game who made it where he was. Mm-hmm. Most of the other people spent most of their life really struggling, and even the guys that made it at the top quite often had these terrible, tragic stories of, you know, losing all their money, getting taken by lawyers and stuff, and I think he just did not want that for his kids or his grandkids. Mm-hmm. But on the upside, I ended up going into an art career and was able to achieve a pretty high level of success before he passed away. So I was able to go back to him and go, you know, the drawing thing, it's a good idea.
Wow.
The nice part was being able to, at the end of that, when Dan and I started working together, also incorporate the music. So also before he passed, I was able to show him that, you know, we actually had some pretty good musical success in our own little venue. It was like, that was cool.
That's awesome.
Very, very cool.
That is really awesome. Guys, this is Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Hey. It's just so great to meet you guys. I'm really glad you could come on the show. And before I get to my question, I have something personal. I just want to thank you guys for two things. One of them is Love Muffin. I swear, when I watched that episode when it came out, I couldn't stop laughing. It was incredible. And the other thing I want to thank you for was Candace. I tell you, I had the biggest crush on her, and I don't know why. I loved her. I loved her character. It was really fun. Yeah.
And we were just talking about this right before. Oh, go ahead.
Like, you like crazy women, man.
You got me there.
The favorite thing about the Love Muffin gag was that Doofenshmirtz reads out what it stands for. Like, we're putting together the League of Villainous Evildoers.
Maniacally United.
Maniacally United for frightening investments in naughtiness.
That's it.
And then they say, you want us to be called Love Muffin? And Duvin just looks at this thing where he's capitalized all these letters and he's surprised. Like he wrote it all. He came up with his name without thinking of the anagram, the anagram for it.
That was awesome. It really was. Yeah. Okay, now back to the boring interview. Now, you were talking about your family and stuff like that and the influence, the musical influence they had. What were some of the outside the family musical influences that you guys have? And did you use some of those influences in the music or songs that you wrote for the show?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I think we both have a very wide and eclectic taste in music. But mine may be even more so than Swampy's. I mean, I have Eminem in my car. I have Indigo Girls. I have Glenn Miller. I have Louis Armstrong and Elvis Costello. You know, like we both have this wide variety in our iTunes libraries that we listen to all the time. Everything from Nine Inch Nails to Ina Sumac. so and we try to take from all of it. You know, we wrote around 400 some songs for Phineas over the years, mm-hmm. and so you would get to a point and go, oh well, you know, like, what can we do that's different? You know I can write this kind of song in my sleep, but you know, what if we do this? And you know, and a lot of times you'll hear something on the radio say, I want to write that kind of song, and you'll go and write something in that genre. It's good to stretch yourself out that way.
And cool. I mean, you kind of take for granted, and I always did, that people were familiar with much older music. And then you realize as you grow up and think, no, most people are only listening to the stuff that's currently on the radio. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. my friends and contemporaries were amazed when you go, oh, Begin the Beguine, love that song. Like, what? And you're like, oh, yeah, I have a whole bunch of music that not everybody else did, and that was a great benefit. But we both found out we had some really eclectic stuff, and that was, again, I think part of the thing that made our partnership so great. We had, you know, these amazing similarities of comedy reference, but also very deep in the music reference. You know, we had those... It's like, oh, yeah, we both like tweaky, weird music. So when we're writing, we're able to pull references from a much wider variety of places. Mm-hmm. And it makes the process easier and more fun. And we also never had kind of anybody saying no to, it's like, okay, let's do a, you know, real Lounge Lizard-y kind of song. There wasn't one of us going, nah, I hate that music.
Yeah.
It was always just yes, which is kind of the secret to great improv. Is, you know, mm-hmm. he's just like, yeah, okay. And- Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's figure it out.
Hi, guys. This is Phoebe. Just wanted to introduce myself. But going off of that, it's just like for your partnership. When you guys first started Phineas and Ferb, did you guys like have in mind to develop musical numbers for each episode, or was that something that developed over time? Like, what was?
We wrote.
I've often said that we are incapable of making a show without music in it.
Yeah, because we always feel like, you know, like music, if you do a song for a cartoon, that's the closest you get to immortality, because kids who are now doing YouTube videos of them singing the theme song to Phineas and Ferb or covering Squirrels on My Pants and a ukulele or things like that, those kids are going to know those songs when they're 60 years old and we've been dead for a long time. You know, like they're not necessarily going to remember an actual plot line from Phineas and Ferb, but I don't remember any Archie's plot lines, but I can still sing Sugar, and that's sort of immortality. So we always felt like that's what we like to do in in cartoons. We did it all the time in Rocco, and we had always planned on putting songs into Phineas and Ferb, but we were sort of feeling like we're gonna have to sneak some songs in here so that they'll get used to it and stuff. And we wrote the theme song, and we wrote the Perry the Platypus song, we wrote Gitchy Gitchy Goo, and pitched them and had our composer produce them and make them sound like radio ready songs, and we played them for them in the first pitch after the pilot for the first episodes, and their only note was, can we hear those songs again? And we played those songs for them again, and they said, who wrote these songs? And me and Swampy wrote these, and he's like, well, can you write a song for every episode?
Wow.
Yes.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Yeah, we don't need to sneak it in anymore. We'll do it because you guys asked us to do it.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. if you guys insist, we will be there for you. We're givers.
It's always great to be asked to do something you're going to do already.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It would not be too much trouble. We've been able to Jedi mind trick the executives on things like
that. When you guys sit down to write a song, what is the process that you guys go through? Is it, do you guys do it together? Do you do it separately, or is it both?
Well, it's usually like me and Swampy, or me and Swampy and Martin. Martin and I would usually sit and figure out the melody of a chorus. We'd have a general idea of what a chorus would be. Swampy will sit and write like 30 rhyming couplets that are really clever, you know, but don't necessarily go together, but you know. And so when we get a chorus and we figure out where the verse is, you know, like, going to go melodically, then we look at all the rhymes he already has, and then we start plugging those in and connecting them with other rhymes and stuff like that, and then we all put it together and it suddenly becomes a song. It takes about an hour, I guess. Something like that.
And we always said that, you know, people say, oh, that's amazing. But I thought, I mean, yeah, it, again, I think it's because we don't say no to a lot of things. It's a very additive process. But also, we don't have to get out any of our inner angst. We're not trying to sort out some tragic love story. We're not waiting
for the news to hit us.
Yeah, we know that there's a girl, she has squirrels in her pants, and we've got 45 seconds to fill. So it makes that part of it a little easier to jump onto.
Oh, my God. Yes.
You guys just said something that, to me personally, as a performer and actor, that means a lot. And the fact that you said you don't say no, I've had so much trouble in the past creatively with people who think they have to judge everything and filter things out before they get to something. And to me, that just slows down the creative process.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The best stuff we found is the stuff that you had no idea that that's what you wanted. And because people weren't in the room saying no, you were able to take that, you know, and say, I don't know, maybe. And it ends up being amazing because it is out of left field. And, you know, humor, so much of humor is that, you know, what you're not expecting.
Now, when you're
deceiving your expectations.
A lot of the times, a lot of times we'll say the thing that is the worst possible pitch, you know, as just a way of making the other guy laugh. And then the other guy will go, no, I know you're joking, but I think we could do that if we do this, and on the first Rocco episode that we wrote together, I remember one of us saying, we should have him riding the dead horse from three scenes ago because there was a taxidermed horse in it, you know, and we needed this chase scene, and I was like, oh, it'd be funny if he was riding the dead horse, and Swampy said, oh, and we both laughed, and then Swampy said, no. We could do that. We could put it on casters, and he could oh yeah. Then he could rope it. You know, like this. So it's something that if I had just been doing it by myself, or if he had just been doing it by himself, we probably would never have gotten there. But because we said it out loud, because we weren't afraid to say the stupid thing out loud, then suddenly you can pile on it and make it into something.
That's so.
We needed the idiot in the room to go, no, do that thing.
Yeah,
the thing that feels so stupid. Do that.
That's like so freeing as artists, because I feel like a lot of times everyone's always like filtering themselves to not go there. But if you are saying the worst thing that can happen and you still make it work, then that's like the spectrum of creativity is wide open.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of the writers, especially in sitcoms, say that a lot of the sitcom comedy writing rooms are a little toxic, and people are really scared to say something that doesn't get a laugh because they'll get ridiculed by their colleagues. And I feel like how do you even write something good and original then, if people aren't willing and ready to say the stupid thing that would never work in a million years? That's how you get comedy, is you have to say that stuff out loud, and that helps, you know, helps you get from one thing to the other. And to me, that's just the fun of a writer's room.
Now,
most of the things I say are just because I am hoping to get ridiculed by my colleagues.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
And we ridicule them a lot. So,
that's awesome.
Satisfied.
Now, do you, there's also another thing in these songs that you put, and it's the covering styles. Yeah, you do everything from like 16th century madrigals, rock, country, Broadway show to. How does that enter into each song that you write, that you choose an actual style for it?
Well, a lot of times we'll say, oh, it'd be fun if we did this as like one of those old barnstorming day songs, or it would be cool. Let's write a song and see if we can make a song that sounds like an ABBA song without it actually stealing an ABBA song. And, you know, and then that's where we start listening to, you know, like, okay, how does Dancing Queen go? What kind of chords do they use to, you know, okay, it's a lot of major chords in ABBA, you know, and they go to the four a lot, or, you know, and figuring out how to do something in that style. It's made me a much better songwriter, much more versatile songwriter, because when we started on Phineas, I had to really look up, you know, and figure out, you know, like I had to find a song that I could sort of use as a reference and then figure out, what kind of jazz chords are they using here? And then, you know, like, okay, so I can use some major sevenths or something. And then, and now when we write a song, usually it's the first thing out of my hands. I just have to think, okay, I want to do something, you know, like that sounds like it was written on a banjo in the 40s, you know, and I'll just immediately go to a bunch of chords that'll work, even if I never played those chords in that order again before. It's like you just stretch that muscle enough and it becomes second nature.
Wow, we're in awe.
Yeah.
I mean, but somebody said that about, are you ever afraid you're going to run out of ideas? And Dan mentioned something we've thought for a long time, is that the more you do it, if you think of it as a muscle and not a well, it's not a well that's going to run dry. It's a muscle, and the more you flex it, the better you get at finding the ideas. It gets easier, not harder.
That's very true. As a songwriter, you know, you have to keep doing it every day. And, you know, Lord knows, you guys, like you said earlier, you know, you wrote over 400 songs for Phineas, and now you're up to at least, what, 50 to 75 songs, I would guess, for Milo already?
Something like that.
Cool. Well, it seems to me that going back to that never saying no thing, creativity, the more you create, the more ideas come to you out of the side that, oh, I got to write that down for later. I got to write that down for later. And it just keeps building on that.
Or just for the writing session alone itself. How did you guys hook up with Danny Jacob?
You know, Danny was a guy that the music department was recommending to produce the songs, because he played in top 40 bands. He played in heavy metal bands. He toured with Sheena Easton and with Cher and George Michael.
He played on one of Ray Charles' last albums.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, he's played with everybody in every, he's played in orchestras, you know, he's just one of these very versatile guys, but he really knows how to produce a song and make it sound like it's on the radio. And so the first couple songs, they sent it to him. You know, we went and met with him, and he did a really good job. So we used him again and used him again. And then they were really excited because the head of the music department had been sort of grooming Danny to be a composer for an underscore for a show, because he felt like he was ready to do that. And when the executive said, can you put a song in every show, he went and said, hey, if it's going to be really expensive if we have to hire an outside guy to produce the song, I think we should have Danny do it, and then he can also do the underscore, and we can just make it part of his deal to produce the songs while he's doing the underscore. And it was like, you know, Danny says that was his big break. That's what turned him into a composer. And
for us, he did the demo for our theme song, and it was great, really great, and exactly what we felt we wanted. And so it made that next decision to give him a chance at something he may not have done before, it made that really easy.
Yeah, the original version of the theme song was like it was really old-timey. It was like, you know, it had like strings in it, and it just sounded like a band from the turn of the century, which was, you know, like my original concept for it. And then when we talk about it, we said, actually, let's make it more, I wonder how we could do this song more contemporary. Make it, you know, like what would, you know, what would the Green Day version of this song be? Mm-hmm. And we went out to a couple of composers to just give their take on it, and Danny's was so far and above the best of them that we were thrilled to hook up with him.
And then we ended up with the guys from Bowling for Soup actually doing the, you know, playing that version of it, which was just beautiful.
Yeah.
And you guys have worked with so many talented musicians. Slash, Kenny Loggins, Fee Weibel, Sheena Eaton, Chaka Khan, like Clay Aiken, Kelly Clarkson, yep. anyone and everyone probably. Was it intimidating to work with these artists in any form or way?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask them, and I was going to say, you'd have to ask them. I don't know.
They were intimidating for them to work with us.
It's freakishly intimidating, but you really have to kind of, you can't think about that. You know, you do have that moment of, oh my God, I'm about to work with fill in blank here. And then you go, okay, big deep breath, let's go, because we got to have a really good, funny song. And usually we have a limited amount of time to get it. So you're much more interested in making sure whoever you're working with is comfortable and having fun. Because that's the key to everything we're doing. It's not just that it has to be a good song, but there's an element of fun and comedy and humor in it somewhere. So you have to create that environment. And really quickly, especially with these folks, they've all, you know, the big names like that have been doing it so long, and they're so good that if you just make everybody comfortable, it flows really quickly, and you almost immediately forget that you're sitting in the room with a musical god to you.
Right.
And then later, after it's done and you've gotten what you need and you get a big hug and you take a quick selfie and you're back in your car, there's a moment where you go, and then you're fine.
Yeah.
That's what I love about you guys is, I mean, you guys are in our eyes and in so many other people, you guys are so huge, and yet you go through the exact same emotions. Mm. You guys are so down to earth with that.
Of course.
You know, and that's just, I think that's why I love you guys so much, too. So it's just amazing.
Yeah.
Have you guys had, like, musical guests that would beg to be on your show, or is it usually, like, is this something you guys cast?
Well sometimes, like Slash, actually, his people called and said, would you want to maybe do something with Slash? He's a big fan of the show. And we were like, is that a trick question?
We're going to have to think about it.
If he wants to come in and write a song. And that was just a really fun bit. And then we spent a whole day in the studio with him. And I got to, you know, and I got to sing, you know, like we gave a bridge to Doofenshmirtz. So I got to sing on a song with Lazio, you know. That was really cool, but that came from him. You know, like he had kids that were the right age for Phineas, and he was watching with them, and he liked all the songs,
and he
got together. We had Slash actually when Guns N' Roses got back together, he sent us tickets to go see them in Coachella. He wrote us out of the blue and said, "Hey, we're back together, and we're playing at Coachella. If you guys want to go, I got comps." And this is how old I am. This is how I knew I was an old man. My first thought was not, hell yes, I'm gonna, you know, like it's Slash is inviting me to Guns N' Roses. Yes, I'm going to go. That was not my first thought. My first thought was, oh, that's way out in Coachella.
That was my first thought.
And then my wife was like, honey,
am I going to be able to stand that long?
Oh, gosh.
We have to go.
How far are the bathrooms?
Yeah.
Either the bathroom is or the closest fence. That's.
Yes, exactly. I'm like 54. I'm like, I'm going to be the oldest person at this guy. And I think I was, except for the fact that Axl Rose is actually old. older than me. I think that's, you know, he was just,
hey, I spent many a year going to the Electric Daisy Carnival, and I'm up there, so.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, you can
well,
do
it was,
that.
It was such a good show, and watching Slash, you know, I'd seen Slash play before. I'd been, you know, I'd played along with him before. But seeing him up there with the hat and the, and his projection, huge, like five stories tall on the screen, and then turning around and seeing all these heads just bobbing all the way back into the distance as far as it can go. I told him later, I said, I was looking at that and I was like, wow, that's Slash's job. He's at work right now. Slash has a weirder job than me, and I have a really surreal job.
My favorite thing with Slash was when he said, that wasn't my job.
My job is everything else. Yeah. That's the perks of my job. That's what he said.
He came over to, we met over at Danny's house, and for us, yeah. we were getting together to write the song. What we didn't realize till later is Slash was coming over just to meet us and talk about the song. And we're who we are. So by the time he walked in, we're like, oh, hey, you're here. Great. Grab a guitar. We're writing. And he had that moment of kind of, wait, what? Oh, yeah. I didn't bring my guitar. And we're saying, okay, it's Danny's house. There's 50 of them. Grab one. And we wrote the song, and we didn't find out till later when he said, that kind of scared the crap out of me.
Oh,
how funny.
You guys
scared him? He's got a much slower process to this whole thing, and we're like, no, write song. Yeah. It's animation. Yeah. This is just...
We got about an hour.
And it was really great.
Wow, that's cool. Awesome.
Yeah. Did you guys, was the singing part of the audition when you guys cast like Phineas and Ferb and Milo Murphy's Law? Like, was that part of the audition process or?
No,
we definitely made Al audition his singing before we gave, no, we didn't.
Crazy. No, well, I mean like, not like, not just for the TV shows in general.
But everybody on this show except Kelly Hu, I think, and Ferb. Sing their own songs. We just lucked into a bunch of people who could really sing.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. Well, wow. You mentioned Weird Al. He's doing the voice for Milo. And was there any consideration of having his input into the actual music of the show rather than just singing some things?
Well, he's got a whole label concern for, you know, like, so... It would be really expensive to have him write a song with us. Yeah. So what we sort of found out is that his manager like doesn't want those two to collide, those two facets of him to collide that way, because that's his bread and butter. If he starts writing songs with us, then it takes away from the other thing. So generally speaking, we just write songs for him and then he sings them. He's a fantastic musician, and we would, you know, I completely understand that that's his career, you know, that's where he makes his money. And Disney won't pay for
it.
We don't have that kind of budget.
When you're writing a song for Al, you can write much more complicated. It's very freeing. Because you know a couple of things. One, he's completely capable and staggeringly professional and just musically gifted. And you know whatever you do, he's going to make it substantially better.
Yes.
So when you're in there doing it, you have somebody who's going to go, oh, hey, I could go up here, you know, and then we could do this. And it's like, yeah, of course you can. You could do anything you want. You're Weird Al. Yeah. You know, and almost those are almost always great suggestions. So it stops... kind of weighing on you once you get to that stage, you know the song is in great hands and it's only going to get better.
The fun part is when, you know, during the course of Phineas, we would, you know, we had a couple songs that we wrote parodies of our own songs where we took the same instrumentation and changed the lyrics to sort of make fun of our own song for second season or third season. You know, we did Snuck Your Way into My Heart, and then we did Kick Your Way into My Heart for Doofenshmirtz at some point. And we would always call that writing our own Weird Al version, right? And now for Milo, we wrote We wrote our own Weird Al version of one of our Phineas and Ferb songs and just changed the lyrics to sort of make fun of that. And I actually, so we wrote our own Weird Al version, and then we actually got Weird Al to sing it, which is,
wow.
That's
it's
so
sort
funny.
Of this weird, it's sort of like a snake eating its own tail. Mm-hmm. It's holding in on itself.
Oh, that's good. Well, so I imagine your approach to writing songs for the new show kind of stayed the same. I mean, I can't imagine there would be a difference in the process, but maybe is there any difference in attitude towards writing songs for the new show?
No, I mean, we still, like, when we get it all get in the room, it's still the same thing. It's just, you know, the guitars and go. We do tend to write more on the computer, on GarageBand, using loops. You know, especially if the songs that I've had to do over the weekend when we have not been able to schedule all of us in the room, and I'll often just get on my GarageBand program and just start loops and then build it on the computer, which is a different way of writing songs, which I had never done before because, you know, computers didn't exist back when I was young.
Mm-hmm. Way back then.
Yeah, but it's how a lot of, I talk to pop songwriters now. That's how they work. They work almost exclusively. They write while they're recording it, which is, to me, would feel very backwards back then because it used to be so, you know, recording time was so precious. But now, since you can just have it in, you know, a little studio in your house, you can be putting the instrumentation together as you're putting the song together.
I was doing, I did a about 15 episodes of a Pete the Cat series for Amazon, and we were working with KT Tunstall, you know, that did Suddenly I See and Big Black Horse and the Cherry Tree, and
yeah,
she was doing
song.
A voice. But the thing that got me is she'd be on tour, and you'd call and say, hey, look, we have this little ditty. It's about a 20-second little piece of music that's got to do with your character, and in the show her character's a musician. And if you'd like to, you know, flesh something out, you know, that would be great. And a couple of days later, she would send you this demo that you're thinking, well, I don't know how to make that any better. You're calling it a demo.
Wow.
And she's saying, I did that in my hotel room with my computer while I'm on the road. And you're thinking, oh, yeah, it's different now. Because we still have, you know, Danny, I think, still somewhere has the recordings of when we first started Phineas, where on a Friday night after we'd written the song, we would call him and leave the song on his answering machine. We'd literally call and say, hey, Danny, here you go. This is the song we're doing. It's going to, you know, we're going to play it for you, but it should sound like Frank Sinatra meets the Sex Pistols being sung by, you know, Aretha Franklin. And then we would just sing it badly into the answering machine on the phone.
Oh, my God.
And then sometime the next week, Danny would deliver this demo that sounds like exactly what we wanted.
Wow.
Yeah. But now, it's like Dan said, you pop up GarageBand and you can record stuff in and throw in the loops, and it's so much easier, and it takes the same amount of time.
Yeah, the demo of the Milo song has almost all of that instrumentation in it. You know, the different keyboard bits, the bass, the theme song of the Milo song, the GarageBand demo is just a little less clean than the finished version.
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, you're right.
As opposed to the first season of Phineas, it was literally an acoustic guitar and a bunch of us standing around a microphone singing, you know, Gitchy Gitchy Goo. You know?
It sounded like a bunch of drunk frat boys at a beach party.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, so that's why it was so successful.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hitting that certain demographic, exactly.
And that's just technology, the availability of.
No, you guys are right.
Being able to have a studio.
Yeah, no, you guys are absolutely right because, I mean, I remember, you know, earlier on in my songwriting career, I had to go into, you know, some sort of recording studio. And now I actually have a recording studio in my home, you know, in like most musicians out there, you know, one of your spare bedrooms is your recording studio, and that's exactly what it is, and that's where we do the podcast from also, and it's just amazing how much technology has brought us along overall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the thing, I have a little studio over in Venice, and I just put a little recording booth in there, and it was a package that I literally bought from Guitar Center, and then you spend a couple hundred dollars buying the extras.
Yeah.
And you realize, oh, I can now produce something in there that's already technically infinitely better than anything that was recorded throughout the 60s.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah,
and
that's true.
And it cost me a couple hundred bucks.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And that's just sort of weird to think about.
Can you imagine what your grandfather would say about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's that was the weird thing about, like, what he did and what we do. He was orchestrating for a big band. And I remember sitting watching him write. He had a grand piano in his living room.
Wow.
And he would sit there with the charts out and the pencils and would be, you know, blang, blang, blang on the piano. He was a terrible piano player by his own admission. He's just awful. But that's how he used to sit and write. And he was writing for horns and, you know, saxophone and, you know, everybody all at once.
That's crazy.
So it was a completely different process. We, I think, still think like a rock band. We're, you know, we're really thinking in our head about 4 or 5 instruments at the most of the time.
Mm.
And it's a different process. And when he went out and played, he had to make sure 30 people knew what the heck they were doing.
Wow.
And all the music had to be written out. Everybody had to be given full instructions. Most of our stuff is, I don't know, you're a great bass player. Figure something out. We want something like that. And the most we have to do is go, no, maybe a little more of this, a little less of that.
That's so true, Swampy. That is so true. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You guys have released a number of albums with Phineas and Ferb. Will you guys be releasing anything for Milo Murphy, like, you know, his own soundtrack soon?
Oh,
well, you always see,
would,
it sounds like we have
to.
The choice.
Think,
we don't know.
You should call Disney and get them on
yeah.
that right away.
We're going to get our listeners to start calling Disney. Be like, we want yeah. this. We want their
Absolutely.
Soundtrack.
We keep
Disney
thinking we should at
would,
some point.
I would love to release Milo songs. I think there's a lot of really great Milo songs, but it's, you know, it hasn't caught on as big as Phineas yet. So we'll see.
Maybe Disney's a little
sometime
afraid
in the
that
future.
Something will go wrong.
Oh, no.
I think sometime in the future we need to go on the road as Love Handle.
Oh,
hey,
and
yeah.
just
can
do
I,
a tour.
Can I play rhythm guitar with you guys if you do? Can I go with you guys?
If we ever get there, you're more than welcome.
Oh, my God. I am so there. I've got my Les Pauls and Strats just collecting dust right now, so I would love to go out with you guys.
We did a show in Tennessee this last year, just a couple of months ago, I guess, with the where they had us come out and sing, you know, like they gave us a band of real musicians and had us come out and do like an hour of Phineas songs and, you know, tell stories about how the show was made and how the songs came into being and stuff like that. And it was funny because these are all songs we've written, but we wrote them in an hour 10 years ago, and now we have to, like, we have to, like, relearn them all. Like, you know, we had to have somebody do charts for us because it was like, I don't remember what chords those are. I would have to listen to it, like, if
no.
it was on the radio, and I don't have that kind of time. So, you know, like, so we had, like, 3 rehearsals, and we did this show, and it was great. It was in Tennessee, and people came from 3 states over, some of them, to hear us play stupid little songs and sing.
What were the audience age group? Like, was it just, like, ranging from, like, kids to adults? Like,
from kids through...
Oh, we had everything in between.
You know, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was...
We
it was
had
and
grandparents who'd watch the show with their grandkids, their grandkids.
Yeah.
It was, you know, all you could imagine,
was,
a lot of college kids.
Yeah, because a lot of the hardcore fans from back then are now in college. We have this whole group of college age kids who came in with full on Phineas shirts and hats and you know, like it was really funny. There were some people who follow us on Twitter that literally got on planes to get there.
I got to admit to you guys, I actually own a pair of. Perry Agent P boxer shorts.
Excellent.
I love them.
A man of style and taste.
I don't think I've seen yours, but I
but I have seen those. That was one of those things of walking through a department store and stopping and looking at them.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Sure.
Yep. Well, I got them.
We have somewhere an image that Rick Riebenacker, who used to be kind of our liaison over at merchandising, and occasionally he would send us the stuff where the design had been rejected. And there was a pair of men's shorts with a Perry the Platypus face, just really poorly placed.
Oh, no.
Creating just something that you, it was an image you didn't want in that region of your body. But he used to find these things and send them over, and it was always this kind of, oh my God.
sell those a touch of romance, you know? you know, earlier you were mentioning, you know, the show in Tennessee and everything. And when I saw you guys, you know, going off, and I'm going, God, I wish I could get a plane ticket to go out there. Are you guys going to do anything like that live with Milo Murphy songs sometime soon or anything? Or have you guys thought about doing that also with Milo Murphy songs?
Yeah, we've thought about it. I think we would have taken Al and done it there with done a couple of Milo songs there, but he was I think his schedule just didn't work out.
Mm. Oh yeah.
There doesn't seem to be as, you know, Phineas was such a huge Universal hit, and you know it was like a number one show on animated show on TV for 7 years or something. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, Milo's got a very loyal following that seems to be building, but we're not quite there yet. So I think most of the people would be coming out to hear Phineas songs, and I would love to expose them to some of the Milo stuff so that they could have another reason to turn it on.
Were you guys worried when you guys were creating Milo Murphy that it wouldn't be able to come out of the massive shadow that Phineas and Ferb that you guys had?
Oh, I wasn't worried. I told them flat out it was probably, you know, it's like, yeah, I hope you guys aren't expecting another Phineas and Ferb, mm-hmm. because you know, we don't even know how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can make a funny show, and I genuinely think Milo is as good or a better show than Phineas and Ferb.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about zeitgeist where suddenly something hits.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, it's like, I do think that Phineas was a great show. I think I'm very, very proud of it. But Swampy and I weren't trying to make the number one show in the world. We were trying to make a funny show that would make us laugh. And that's, you know, that's all we can really do.
Mm-hmm.
All the rest is up to promotion. It's up to the, you know, like just what specific, you know, mass consciousness is going on at the time. So
I
was specifically trying to make the number three show in the world. I had a little thing up on my mirror in the morning. It was part of my positive affirmation. You are number three. You are number three. So yes. I was genuinely super surprised when we got all the way up there. So
and number three is like the best. There's no pressure.
Actually. Yeah.
At least it wasn't number two.
Disappointed when we were number one.
Well, you guys did a number of crossover specials with the Marvel, Star Wars. Is there going to be stuff like that for Milo?
From your mouth to Bob Iger's ears, I think.
Well, I'm a former Disney cast member, so talking to him is not my specialty. Yes.
Mm. We always wait and see.
We did the two big ones, so let's see what else they buy. They bought Fox now, so.
They might buy you guys.
Maybe. Yeah.
We'd be happy if they just let us do, you know, kind of whatever we figure out would be the next Star Wars thing, because that was just such a fun little universe to play in. And
it would be.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had a lot of requests because we did. You know, our Star Wars special was sort of this parallel story that went along with A New Hope, and we've had a lot of requests for Return of the Jedi or Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. I think that'll be fun to do at some point. It'll be a lot of fun.
Cool. So here we are now with the new show and everything, and because you left us with the Phineas and Milo crossover cliffhanger, and I think that was back in September or October.
Yes.
When do we get to see the conclusion of the crossover, and when are more episodes coming up?
at the beginning of third season, there's an hour-long special with where we have Doofenshmirtz and Phineas and Ferb and Perry the Platypus and Candace and Isabella. Everybody's in it.
Is Norm going to be in characters. It? You going to have Norm there?
I don't think Norm makes an appearance, actually. Oh, but
I'm disappointed.
You know, there was a lot for us to fit in. The thing that we love about that special is we've been planning the whole first season around building to that special. So it's not like oh, now we have to stop and do a crossover special. It's all part of the story. We always thought of Milo as being in the same universe, in the same city as Phineas and Ferb, and we dropped hints all the first season. And there's been this big, long series or season-long arc that leads up to this moment where we reveal Doofenshmirtz. And so that was very satisfying to us to actually do a crossover that was germane to the plot of the original show.
Hmm. Cool. Well, you could just blow Norm up, never to be seen again. Hi, I'm Norm. Kaboom.
Boom.
Yeah. I think you may. Yeah. You know, now that we've established them in the same city, you may end up seeing a little bit of Norm later.
All right.
In the background.
Yeah. It's very possible.
Yeah, Swampy, I know that you do a few charities and everything. Mainly, I know, because we got to go see you for the Race for Autism last year.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get to go do that again next year.
Dude, we were so, yeah, because we wanted to go again this year and everything. So, yeah, definitely let us know. So is there anything else? I know there's another surf one that you do, too. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, well, the Walk on Water charity is our surf therapy. We do surf therapy for special needs kids and their families, and special needs adults as well. And it's our season is going to be kicking off, I think, I want to say end of March. We're just finalizing it all now. But I'm still working with that. My son's one of the ambassadors. And
oh,
please
nice.
Go to www.awalkonwater.org. Take a look at the schedule. Sign up to be a volunteer or give whatever you can give. We're doing more events this year than we ever have. And you're really looking to expand into different areas. We're going to do, hopefully this year, our first wave pool event so we can start bringing surf therapy to people that are landlocked. And it's very near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, which is why I wanted
I
to bring
care
it up.
Of yeah. Water safety for them. And it's even if you can't give or you don't want to volunteer, take a look at the schedule. Come on out and just watch the events, because we love just having people there cheering the athletes on from the beach. And there's something just amazing and brings tears to your eyes when you see one of these kids up on a wave heading toward the beach and the whole beach just erupts in cheers.
That sounds cool.
It's awesome. It's absolutely awesome. I know,
best way to spend the day ever.
Yeah, I know that you did something recently in Huntington Beach, and I was so upset that we didn't get a chance to get out to see you, because I mean, we're only where I live, I'm only 15 minutes away from Huntington Beach.
Yeah, I was a little upset. I figured you'd be there.
I know, I'm
but,
sorry.
But, you know, you're friends, so I'll let you off the hook this time.
Thank you, Swampy. I appreciate that, bud. But,
yeah.
But no, it's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, please come out.
Yeah, because every time you do something in Orange County or near our house, you know, Karen and I and Roman, we always try to make sure we get out and see you, mm-hmm. because the charities that you do, I know how dear and close they are to your heart, and I know how much they mean to you. And, you know, we're always there to support you, my friend.
The hard part is I do the water safety. So from about 9 in the morning when the thing kicks off, I'm about chest deep in water. When we get a lunch break, I eat and I fall asleep somewhere for 15 minutes until we get up for the second session. So people have come and said, it was a great day, it was amazing, but I only saw you standing out in the water with your hat. I kept waving. And it's like, yeah, I'm not looking at you, I'm really watching the water. The water safety thing is like all-consuming. So if you ever come out and I don't say hi, just know in advance, it's not you. I get a little laser focused.
No, which is understandable. Which is understandable. Dan, is there any charities that you're involved with, or anything special you'd like to plug also right now? Or?
There's a charity in Pasadena that we're involved with called Door of Hope, and they're very, very good at getting people out of homelessness.
It's like a
halfway house between homelessness and they live there, and they're taught all the coping skills, all the ways of getting a job, how to keep a job, how to keep your finances so you don't go back to homelessness. And the recidivism rate is so low, it's crazy. It's like under 10% of people who go through there ever become homeless again. I think it's a great, great charity.
And what's the website for that, Dan?
I don't have it on me, but I will send it to you, and you can talk it up on the next one.
Okay, and then we'll make sure that we put all the links also on our website too for everything. So.
I think it's doorofhope.com. I'm going to look it up right now.
We'll check it out.
But yes.
Cool. Well,
but they're great.
Awesome, awesome. Well, one thing we like to play with all of our guests is the island game. So basically, you guys are on a deserted island. Doesn't necessarily have to be together.
Oh, I thought you were going to make me name islands. I was going to start, Catalina, Bermuda. Isle of Man.
So basically, on a deserted island, and you could only take one candy bar, what would it be?
Three Musketeers.
Ooh, Three Musketeers.
Ooh, not only that, it's light and fluffy inside, so it may float.
You never know.
What was yours, Dan?
It might be a Heath bar.
Ooh, that's
a toffee bar.
So good. I love them.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
You guys can only take one album.
Oh, man. Joe Cocker, Mad Dogs, and Englishmen.
There's a bunch of albums that would fit in that. Maybe Spilt Milk by Jellyfish.
Ooh, have to check that one out then.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
It sort of depends on when.
Gotcha.
Because I go through periods where, this is the album. This is the Desert Island album. And keeps
my
changing.
Stepdad was the one who had the Bad Dogs and Englishmen 8-track tape. Look it up, kids. used to just play, and that's how I became a massive fan of Leon Russell and Chris Stanton. It's a great album wall to wall, and it's really nice now because my son's really starting to get into it.
Cool. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Okay, you guys could only take one movie.
Mine's going to be the
Clock
weirdest
the
for
great
a desert
race.
Island.
I don't know.
I'm sorry, what was yours, Dan?
It would either be Groundhog Day or Jaws.
Jaws
would be a strange one for a desert island, though, I think.
Go ahead, Swampy. What's yours?
I'd have to go with The Great Race. Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmon,
very
nice. Natalie
good
Wood.
Good choice.
Because you need to laugh, especially if you're stuck at a desert island. Have to laugh.
Awesome, awesome. Okay, now you guys can only take one person for conversation, and it can't be a spouse or a significant other. Who would you take? And it could be dead or alive. And of course, if they're dead, they would be alive while there.
For conversation. I'd probably take Swampy, actually.
Oh,
there you go.
Now what would Swampy say?
Well, let's see. Anybody but Dan. Anybody but Dan. Let's see.
Who would you take?
I don't know. I think. I don't know. Whenever that kind of question comes up, it's like, who's your dinner party guest?
Right.
I find that people, if you really think about it, the ones that you choose, like Martin Luther King or Jesus, I don't know. I would just imagine that it's probably you're letting yourself in for a big letdown.
So you take Dan.
For me, it'd be, yeah, I'd take Dan because there's no way he's going to, I know he's going to underperform for me.
Yeah, exactly. He already knows what a letdown I am.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys would probably like create so much music, or maybe even how many shows on the island. That'd be crazy.
That's right.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. All right, and the last question.
We'd be performing for each other.
Hello. And then the last question for the island game. Take one person for sexual gratification, and it cannot be a spouse or significant other.
Well, okay. Then what's the point?
Oh, that's the sweetest answer.
See, this is why I love Swampy. He's awesome.
What's the point?
I just love it that we both stopped them both dead in their tracks right there.
Yeah. Can I say Dan again?
Sure.
Why not? Yeah.
Someone's pitching, someone's catching.
My favorite growing up was always Lauren Bacall.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
Deep voice.
From when I was really, she just, yeah, wow. Yeah. And she seems like she'd be a hoot.
What about you, Dan?
Selma Hayek.
Oh, Selma Hayek, that's a nice one, too.
Ooh. Flat out. She's one of the few women in film that I could just go see a movie, even if it's bad. If she's in it, because she's like, oh, she's so pretty. She does it for me. And my wife is Latin, and there's a movie she did with Matthew Perry. It's not a great movie. It's just a sweet little romantic comedy. Uh-huh. But he's a gringo, and she's Latin, and we always say, oh, that's like our lives. And we say, remember that time when, and we quote something from the movie that was nothing like anything that ever happened to us.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
Remember that time when your father chased me with that, you know.
Oh, my God. Oh, gosh. Well, now is the time at the end of the show, and Swampy, as you remember, at the end of Brian and Jill, they would always play the trivia game. You recall that, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I used to pull off the road on the way in the morning.
Okay,
it's like any time you guys want me to play, I'm in on trivia.
Okay, well, we do.
And I just had a little text exchange with Brian last week.
How is he doing?
By the way. Oh, he's – I think he's enjoying life very much. He was making sure his family was taken care of recently. I know that was a big strain, but he just seems to be – you know, he's found a happy place to be.
That's great, because we definitely
could not be happier for him.
Well, we're going to have Jill on the show hopefully within the next month or so, because she's already agreed to come on, and we're trying to get Brian to come into the room too with
us. Yeah, Mark was a hoot last week.
Yeah, I came down to when they were doing the radio show. Mark.
Yeah.
And he was kind enough to have us on when we were doing a big Walk on Water event and do all the promo for that. And now I'm still in touch with Katie.
Oh, cool.
Who comes out and watches our voice records from time to time and trying to figure out a way to kind of see if we can figure out a way to get her a role, because I think she'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Katie's would be freaking awesome.
Still in touch with all those folks from time to time and miss them.
Yeah. Us too, which is why we do the podcast, to pay homage to them too. So anyway, so we're going to do our version of the game, and I created a special theme, and it's going to be a little bit similar to what Brian and Jill did. So here we go with our new theme.
Doo-doo.
And now it's time for Quiz Me, Quiz You.
Oh, it gets better, guys. It gets better.
Some kind of brainiac, a know-it-all, some kind of a whiz, got more answers than an almanac. Let's take a quiz. If you think you're extraordinary, cut above the best that there is. If your cranial capacity is something scary, let's take a quiz. Let's all take a quiz.
Oh, yeah. You guys have no idea how long I've been wanting to play that for you.
We've been talking about that segue since 3 hours ago.
We've been talking about that segue since...
Did you enjoy it?
I did. Oh, and I'm
good.
Happy to see you.
Okay.
I'm in my happy place right now. All right, so here we go. Phoebe, I think, is going to be doing the first five questions. I'll be doing the second five. So here we go with question number one. And basically, your name is your buzzer. Here we go.
Okay.
Question number one. The Statue of Liberty was gifted to the United States by which...
Swampy.
Dan.
Swampy?
Swampy.
France.
Yes.
That is correct.
Woo-hoo. Great. Number two. Who founded the first public library in the United States?
Swampy.
Swampy?
I feel like I'm going to give the obvious answer. It's going to be wrong, but I'm going to say Ben Franklin.
Yes.
Wow.
It was obvious.
Swampy
okay,
is two,
Swampy
for two.
Two for two.
Come on, Dan. Let's go.
Number three. Question number three.
Yeah.
Okay, this one. Which fictional detective lived at 221st B Baker Street?
Dan.
Swampy. Dan.
Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
All right, yeah, Dan comes in with one.
Nice.
Which doesn't
my problem
exist,
is that
by the way.
Getting my name.
You're like, Dave, Dan. Question number four. What is the distance around a circle called?
Steve.
Dan.
Swampy.
Circumference.
Steve.
Oh, he already said the answer, though.
That's okay.
Oh, Dan got
but it.
But
it is
I
the
said
answer.
Dan first.
Yeah, Dan said
okay.
it first.
I said Dan first.
Dan was first.
Wow.
Circumference.
Dan's getting a little competitive
hey, it's
there.
It's tied. It's two Swampy.
Yeah.
Swampy two, Dan two.
Ooh, okay. All right.
All right, number five. What is the name of the Greek god of music?
Dan.
Yes,
Orpheus.
Dan. No.
Orpheus?
Nope. Good guess.
Swampy.
Swampy?
Now it's going to be wrong, but I'll go anyway. Artemis.
No.
Sean.
Sean, what's up?
Is it Apollo?
It is.
Hey!
Damn!
Not the Apollo.
At the Apollo.
There you go.
Those are my five. Now Sean is going to ask the next five questions.
All right, so here we go. Question number six. What is the common name for calcium carbonate?
Dan. Baking soda.
No.
Bicarbonate of soda.
What? No.
You can't just keep guessing.
but it is. It's the same thing, right?
No, because what's the common
Steve.
Name for calcium carbonate, Steve?
Antacid.
No. You guys want to hear?
Wow, don't know.
No idea.
It's something that teachers use to use a lot.
Oh, I know.
Swampy.
Chalk.
That is correct, chalk. All right, question number, what are we on? Six, seven. Question seven. I can't count.
One of those.
One of them. All right, question seven. What is the top color in a rainbow?
Phoebe. Oh, my gosh, red.
That is correct, red.
Yay!
All right, okay. Question number eight. How many days are there in a fortnight?
Phoebe.
Swampy.
Oh, dang it.
14.
No,
that is correct.
I didn't finish saying my name. I said Phoebe. Dang it.
Still thinking.
I like that. Okay. Okay, question number nine.
Swampy's just old enough that that's what they used to call them. He remembers when that's how they measured time.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny because Steve does that same thing.
It's what it says on my sundial.
All right. What do you call the younger version of a fireside girl?
Dan? A little spark.
That is correct,
aww.
Little spark.
Nice pull.
Really?
All right. Now I want to see who gets this the quickest between the two of you guys. So here we are. Question
oh,
number
great.
10. Doofenshmirtz's BOAT is an acronym for what?
Swampy.
Dan.
Buoyancy Operated Aquatic Transport.
That is
wow.
correct. Yes.
Wow. I feel like that was a tie between Swampy and Dan.
That's why these guys are partners. Yeah, it's as simple as that.
I got a boat for water skiing, uh-huh. and it was all I could do not to put BOA. But I thought nobody would get it. They would just think I was. So instead, I named it the. I named it the platypus, but I named it in Dutch so people wouldn't know it's me.
Now, Swampy, you have a place up in what, Arrowhead, or is it Blue Jay?
Yeah. No, up in Arrowhead.
In Arrowhead. Okay. All right. Because, you know, it's so I got to tell this quick story, too, before we go. Because my family also has a condo up in Arrowhead. We're up at the Arrowhead Chalets. And we had, I think it was breakfast down in Blue Jay. And next door to this nice little restaurant is this hardware store. And we're walking around and everything and so forth. And Roman goes, Dad, look. Points up to above the door. And there's a picture of Phineas and Ferb that Swampy drew and signed. I'm going, wow. Oh, my gosh. Now that I've met him, I see him everywhere now.
Yeah. Following each other.
And that was it. So I took a picture, tweeted it to Swampy, and he goes, yeah, tell everybody at such and such I said hello.
Wow.
Yeah. They know me all too well. What I usually do is while I'm waiting to pay, I'll take their little stack of note paper and just do a bunch of drawings, and I'll leave them there, and they give them out to the kids who come in.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's so cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
and it's funny. You know who else has a drawing up there is Glenn Keane.
Yes.
Because he's up there all the time. And I did my drawing, and it wasn't until they put it up. I'm like, you really had to put it up next to Glenn's drawing? Because Glenn's drawing is this beautiful rendition of the Beast, I think.
Right.
And it's just, you know, and I'm thinking, I did a little doodle of Phineas. Don't put it next to Glenn's drawing.
Oh,
people will see that I'm terrible.
Oh, that's so awesome. Well, gentlemen, I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Sure.
This has been, you know, something that we've been trying to get you guys on since April. We were actually hoping for you guys to come in the room, and I know how difficult it is to get you guys in on the weekend because we were hoping you would perform actually some of the Phineas and Ferb songs, because I've got a bunch of guitars here myself. Yeah, so whenever you guys...
Well, next time we'll do that.
Yeah, please.
You guys can write a song here.
Yeah, we'll all write a song.
In an hour.
Yeah, write a theme song for us.
We've had the time.
So, Dan, Swampy, thank you so much for coming on with us, guys. And if people want to follow you on Twitter, where can they go?
And I'm at M Monogram, both on Twitter and Instagram.
Wait, Dan, can you say yours again?
At Dan Pobbenmeyer, just my whole name.
Just the whole name. Great, cool. Gentlemen, thank you again so much for coming on to our show.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
It's been wonderful.
John.
You guys made me really laugh, and that doesn't happen all the time. I just love it.
And, of course,
well, give Roman a high five for me.
Tell him
I said howdy.
Will do, buddy. Absolutely. And, again, when you're down in Huntington Beach, give me a call and let me know, and we'll jet down there as soon as we can.
Groovy, man.
All right, you guys take care.
You guys be well.
It was
you
so
too.
Nice to meet you guys.
Bye.
All right, take care.
We'll see you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
And there you go, guys. That is Dan Pobbenmeyer and,
oh my God, that
and
was
Jeff
so
Swampy
cool.
Marsh.
Every time their song would come on, Steve literally knew all the lyrics and was just singing along. It was so cool.
The theme song for Phineas and Ferb was like the very first theme song for a show where I learned every word of.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah. There was only one other. That was the Big Bang Theory. And that's short.
Oh my gosh! Well, you know what? I want to end it. Normally, we bookend the show with the opening song that we did, and of course, it was because of Pat Thorpe's passing. But because of Dan and Swampy, I want to end the show with a song called "Carpe Diem," which means "Seize the Day," that they wrote for Phineas and Ferb. So, real quick, we'll give out our accolades right now. So, the show's website,
yourweeklydose.com, Facebook page, Your Weekly Dose, Twitter page @ Your Weekly Dose, the number one.
And you can also follow me on Twitter @ PX Limbo.
You can follow me @ SilvaLining69.
And if you want to follow me, Sean, you can follow me on both Facebook and Twitter @ SR House Concerts. Corey's Twitter is Corey Lynch, CORIE Lynch. And Vanessa's Twitter is YWD Gal About Town. So there you go. And there's the show ends. go out so there, fun. Seize the day, enjoy the day. So positive and everything.
Go out there and have some fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And don't forget to catch reruns of Phineas and Ferb on Disney XD. And of course, Milo's Murphy's Law, also on Disney XD. New episodes are coming in April. Definitely tune in and watch it. It's such a great show. In the meantime, take care of everybody.
Bye, world.
Have a beautiful weekend. Every day's a brand new day, you gotta carpe diem. And you don't have to build a roller coaster. Just find your own way to make the most of every minute. No waiting for the right time you're in it. Just grab those opportunities when you see them. Cause every day's a brand new day. Baby, carpe diem. Every day's a brand new day. Baby, carpe diem. Well, guys, we hope you enjoyed this past moments with us today and enjoying Jeff Swampy Marsh and Dan Povemeyer, co-creators of Phineas and Ferb, and also Milo Murphy's Law, as well as Pete the Cat and the upcoming Disney Hamster and Gretel. So stay tuned for those. Until then, catch us next week, guys. We will be back live. Everybody will be back in the room. So until then, be good to each other. Take care and have an awesome weekend and an awesome day. And we'll see you guys next week. Don't forget to catch all of our shows on yourweeklydose.com. Once again, thanks to our affiliates, which is Delmarva Talk Radio and also Lime City Radio. We love you guys. Help us keep the show growing. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors. And don't forget, Monday through Wednesday mornings on Delmarva, you can catch us with Past Moments and also with Lime City Radio from noon to one, I believe. You can catch our Past Moments there. And, of course, live every Saturday morning, 1 p.m. for you guys. For everybody else, it's 10 a.m. So until then, take care of each other.
Thank you for listening to this week's show. Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, and bookmark. Then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at yourweeklydose. We'll see you next week.